plagiarism from an academic perspective and what happens when we're dealing with this. I'm going to talk briefly about technologies, and then I'm going to draw these together and focus on the really important points which I think are affecting us as academics. First thing to say is that if you're looking for plagiarism among students, you need to follow some sort of a process, and there is a well-established process which exists where you divide this into four stages. So the first bit is you get everything together. This isn't actually very interesting. You can collect stuff in various ways. Tools are available to help you, or you can just use your institution's VLE. It's not interesting. Then the second part is where it starts to get interesting, where you start to say, well, you've got some students who've got similar work, either with each other or with something external to the course. And we'll come back to this in a minute. This is where technology comes in. This is where clone detection is particularly relevant. And the third stage, confirmation, bearing in mind that there's a legal potential to all of this, we need to say, supposing we've got some similar bits of code, are they similar? Really, are they similar? And there's a danger here, which is we're dealing with people. A computer program will give you an indication, but at the end of the day, there's a human involved. And if something goes through a university process, then you need to be certain. Because at some point, there's going to be a tribunal, and somebody chairing the tribunal you've got to convince. So you don't go into this lightly. Okay, so the fourth bit is once you've established that stuff is similar and you're sure, then why is it similar? So who did what from whom? And did they know when they got the code? And that's actually quite interesting, because one normally assumes that if people plagiarise, then the person plagiarising took it from somewhere, and that's fine, and that probably the person they took it from was likely to be aware. But people make mistakes, people are careless, people put their code in waste bins, and they get picked out. And finally, does everybody understand? Because if a student is accused of plagiarism, and he goes to a tribunal, and the student can say, well, actually, nobody explained to me what this business of plagiarism is. I thought I was doing the right thing. Then they're likely to get let off. Why is it interesting? The detection is interesting. It's an algorithm thing, it's a techie thing, that's great. It's also an educational thing, from two angles. First of all, once you've found somebody plagiarising, what do you do next? How is that process followed through fairly and accurately? But also, how do you, before the process starts, prevent students from doing it in the first place? Quick digression. Let's talk about essays for 1 minute. If students submit essays, then there are ways of deciding whether somebody's been copying. The old-fashioned ways are looking for variations in style, funny phrases, things like that. And of course, nowadays you can do a Google search. But there's one big tool which has already been mentioned called Turnitin, which is subscribed to by most UK universities and many elsewhere, where you can submit students' essays to this tool. It will compare them against each other, and a large code base of other essays is accumulated, and anything that you can get hold of on the internet. So rather a lot of documents. The important thing is this tool will give you two really big handles. First of all, it will take a document and give you a number suggesting how much of that document is substantially similar to documents elsewhere. And it will then give you an interface where the document you're interested in and the bits that it's similar to are highlighted, so you can then stand back and make that human judgment. Oh, and it's got a load of other features as well, so you can print out stuff that can be presented to a tribunal if necessary. So, let's go on to technologies. Why don't we use Turnitin? Well, it doesn't work for code. Nothing more to be said. There are similar things to Turnitin which collect large volumes of documents, and I think Black Duck's already been mentioned. As I understand it, Black Duck has got a database of commercially written software which it has access to for data mining. This slide, I think, is quite interesting. I'll spend a few seconds on it. This slide has got two programs and illustrates what, from my perspective, is the sort of code similarity where you've got an interesting problem about making a decision. So this is a bit of code which prints out the date for sunset. You'll see the code has got quite a lot of similarity, it's got a similar structure. The finer details are different in many ways, but they're sufficiently similar for you to ask the question, is there derived code here? And one of the reasons that it's an interesting example is you've got an algorithm on which those two pieces of code are based, where that algorithm is publicly available. So the question, is there a derivative here, is maybe not terribly easy to answer. There are cosmetic changes, the algorithm is the same, but what do you do next? I'll tell you the answer later if you want me to tell you how that was arrived at. But we've got software which looks at comparing programs from the perspective of an academic wanting to know about student plagiarism. This started off many years ago with software which basically counted artifacts within the code. It was never really very successful. Used on its own, that type of approach doesn't work very well. So we then get various software, again some of these have been mentioned, Moss, JPLAG, which do some sort of structure analysis and compare on those structure analyses. So typically, turning parts of the program into tokens, whatever you happen to mean by a token. And so you would have, for example, these two fragments of code would be considered to be token-wise equivalent. So once you've tokenized, you then get things like these which you have to compare. Depending on the language, depending on the granularity of the tokens you introduce, and by varying those parameters, will affect substantially the accuracy of comparing fragments of code. So you get a number of these detectors. Moss has been mentioned, JPLAG, they're perhaps the biggest two that people are aware of. We've got stuff that we've been working on as well. The problem with some of these is that originally JPLAG was targeted at Java. Okay, it may deal suboptimally with free text as well. MOS will deal with a variety of languages. There's also an issue that some of these detectors require programs to compile. That's fine. We'd rather like our students to write programs that compile and run. Some of them don't. It's a sad fact of life. And we might actually want to give a partially working program credit in terms of student getting marks. So maybe that's a problem. I'm not going to go into the details of things. You can read the details of these slides later on. The algorithms for these differ. There are various variations of either string-based or structure-based algorithms. But one of the things, I'll come back to that in a moment. One of the things I want to point out is that all of these tools have got a nice interface. So if you look at this interface, and this is from JPLAG, like Turnitin, we've got some sort of an interface that allows us to home in on the ones that are of interest, and then allows the interesting bits to be compared against each other for a human judgment. We've done some, our algorithm, I'll tell you about it later if you're interested in it, is reasonably trivial. But again, we've got a nice interface for it. Some way of managing lots of different batches and identifying which are important, and comparing similar bits to each other, again, for that human judgment at the end. And another way of perhaps comparing. If you've got a large class of students, 200 students, you don't want to spend a lot of time running through various pairwise similar programs. You want something which is going to home you in on the ones that are going to be important. And there's quite a bit of work being done on how one can visualise those types of relationships. So this is one where you've got around the edge of the circle the programs, and red links indicate similarities. Click on the red link, you'll get the information you need to scrutinise them. There are commercial products, CodeMatch, for example, many other products. A lot of the algorithms they use are confidential, so in some cases it's difficult, therefore, to make comparisons. For some of them, we've got some information. So CodeMatch, for example, has got a tokenizing and string-based algorithm. And it's got some fairly interesting approaches to how variable names might be looked at in the context of a piece of code being manipulated. Another technique that's been looked at is latent semantic analysis, where you look at a document. This has been used a lot in information retrieval. We've tried applying this to program code as well, where a document is a bag of words, and you look at a corpus of documents as being represented by a matrix of the document against number of occurrences of one of those words within that document. We don't want to talk about the math there.
Are you looking at the code or the comments or both?
Both. The maths for LSA is a bit unpleasant and appears to be not fully understood.
No, fine.
Yeah. Okay. And we've written a tool for doing that. I'm not going to go through this. The bottom bit has got the visualization bit. Again, that's what's important for the academic. Let's not forget heuristics. Good old-fashioned looking at oddities in code. Spelling mistakes in comments. like introducing a semantic defect into the code, which nobody's actually going to notice. If we look for things which the students think nobody's going to notice, we're going to spot stuff. Okay, a couple of issues. Data protection is an issue. One of the problems with few hands going up with MOS, I suspect, is we're not allowed to use it in this country because personal data would therefore be exported.
You can set up a national repository, that's what we know.
Ah.
So we have an instantiation that runs within Canada only.
Okay. Okay, that's another issue. We did a survey a while ago which compared MOS and JPLAG and our own tools, and we looked at the accuracy of the results which came, and of a corpus of about 300 documents where there are about a dozen substantially similar documents, essentially the same results were returned. So about 10 were common, about 2 or 3 varied between the actual tool that returned them. So there's no suggestion that any one of these tools is substantially much better than the others. Which raises an interesting question of why these various different algorithms seem to work to a similarity. Finally, the third bit of this process is establishing the facts. Maybe this slide should have come at the beginning. What do we mean by similar? And I think this is a really important part. And I'm going to digress briefly into something which is not very technical. We actually, a couple of years ago, went and asked some colleagues. Because if you're thinking of student plagiarism, then there are a lot of factors coming in. For example, when we're teaching students to code, we encourage students to take on board good coding practices. We encourage them not to reinvent the wheel. We encourage people to talk to each other. So when is copying code just good old-fashioned academic interaction? Where's the boundary line? So we actually did a survey of colleagues in this country. We got 120 colleagues who teach programming to answer a significant number of questions in the form of scenarios to try and pin this down. And this resulted in some issues being highlighted which my colleagues perceived to be important. So, reuse and self-plagiarism. So a student submits a bit of work for an assignment, and then another assignment next year reuses their own code. Is that okay or not okay? Object-oriented templates are always a bit of an issue because you've got code which is by definition the same. Cross-language stuff has already been mentioned. How much are students allowed to talk to each other? Then various other issues, code generator software, and code taken from elsewhere. So not just open source repositories, there are lots of other places where you can get code from. And another issue was the extent of plagiarism. How much has to be similar before you say this is something that needs to be moved through the university process. We also did a survey of students to see what their view on it was. And we got, along the questionnaire, 700 answers. We were very impressed. This was around exam time. We suspected some of the students were trying to find reasons for not sitting down with their books. But anyway, 15 scenarios. These were scenarios informed by the staff survey and were scenarios where it was not completely obvious whether or not the scenario represented a plagiaristic activity or not. And two things came out of that. The first was that the results were not statistically significant whether the students were undergraduates or master's students or PhD students. We had expected that the PhD students would understand this a lot better. They didn't. And misunderstandings, open source, reusing open source in their code, they failed to understand the licensing issues, cross-language translation, and again, code reuse from other assignments. Final slide, summary. So, three things I've identified here which to me personally seem to be the big issues distilling from this. First of all, we need as academics to make our policy completely clear to students, for example, what is appropriate collaboration, etc. So those areas of misunderstanding are clarified. There's a problem of getting understanding where code is coming from external to your institution, because there are so many sources that it can come from. And finally, cheat sites, or students who get somebody else to write the code for them, where it then becomes almost impossible to identify the plagiaristic activity. Okay, three slides of references.
Thank you. Okay.